Opera Podcast, episode 102. How satisfying was that to say? It was like, welcome back to episode 102 at AA Opera. Fun times.
I'm a poet and I didn't even know it.
I love that. Abby, how are you doing?
I'm okay. Might sound a bit hoarse. I feel slightly, like, can you hear that coming through? Yeah. Another fun pregnancy symptom for me. But other than that, I am okay. I'm just trundling along this week. Not much else to report. What about you? How are you?
Yes, I'm very good indeed. We do have, as she just said, a very special visitor on the podcast this week. Here she
Hello,
is.
Daisy.
Daisy's here with me. She's staying this week, which is very exciting. And she's here. This is moments like this where I would need a video podcast, but we haven't got time for that right
but
now.
But I do not need a video podcast today.
Do you need to get to see her? So I hope she makes you smile, Abby. She's been as good as gold.
I love her little yellow bows.
Yeah, it's her Easter springtime hairdo. Anyway,
You can see she has two female dog owners as she grew up.
Yeah, that's so true. But it's so good to have her. It's like old times for me. It was like getting up this morning and actually getting up and taking her for a walk. I really enjoyed that. So, so that's wonderful. But we had a great time at ENO again on the weekend, didn't we? We headed to see The Dead City by Korngold. And it was a stark contrast from Akhenaten, but that was kind of good, right?
Oh, yeah.
It was really good. So if you want to hear more about it, you can head to our website and check out our latest blog post on that. Go check it out.
Yeah, it was so different from Akhenaten, and it was funny that we went to see them a week apart because every single thing that we've seen so far has been quite far away from each other.
Yeah.
So it was weird to have a different opera so fresh in my mind, and I kind of went for comparisons a lot, but like orchestrally it was so packed. I felt like, you know, oversensed. That's mm-hmm. not the word. What is it? Overstimulated on orchestrations. It was so good on orchestrations. Like, oh my goodness.
Yeah. I mean, please read about it in the blog post, but that was definitely my highlight too. Alongside, I think it was really a luxury to see Dame Sarah Connolly sing live as well. That was the first time I had seen her sing live. But Sarah actually wasn't in it an awful lot, but the singers that were, like, to sing over the orchestra was a big challenge, and they did a great job, and just the stamina required to sing that score, snaps to them. Amazing.
Oh my God, the stamina that they needed was insane.
Yeah.
But yes, on to a different person at ENO. Because today's guest is a Harewood artist, and his name is Benson Wilson. So take it away, Benson.
Benson, a very warm welcome to AA Opera Podcast. Can you start off by introducing yourself to our listeners?
Yeah, sure. My name is Benson Wilson. I'm a baritone from New Zealand. Moved here to London to study at the Guildhall School of Music and Drama, currently based at English National Opera, on my last year of the Harewood Artist Development Programme.
Fantastic. Ooh, very exciting. It's always like, right before, it's like the last year, you're like, oh, what is he doing next?
Yeah.
Right?
Sure we'll Which that. We will get to.
Yeah.
But what was your first experience of opera?
My first ever experience of opera was when I was in the New Zealand Secondary Students Choir. I was 15. We had we were on a course, like a choir course, where we're learning our repertoire to tour, to take on tour, And one of the outings, like, you know, you go bowling or, you know, and one of the outings was to go to the opera. And so they had bought all of us tickets to watch Lucia di Lammermoor.
Ooh, that's a good one.
And I spent the whole opera, yeah, I'm 15 years old, with, you know, 50 other, you know, students my age. So I spent the whole opera throwing M&Ms at everyone else in the choir with who is now my wife. She was like my choir friend.
Yeah.
And yeah, now we're married.
Oh, that's the best story.
First ever, like, yeah, opera experience.
I have to admit, that's not what I was expecting you to say. I thought you were gonna say that you were just like encapsulated by the opera and like everybody else around you was the people throwing M&Ms, but you were the one that was like engaged in the opera. But what a story. Just yeah, it's great.
I was 15.
Fair enough.
Opera's long.
And Lucia di Lammermoor is like, it's a hit and miss because if it's done well, it can be really captivating. But there's like that whole second act where it's quite dull for a bunch of 15-year-olds. You know, it's a dance. It's a long dance. There's a lot of politics happening. But really, the meat of the opera starts in the third act when she comes out and, like, as a mad woman.
Yeah, the mad scene.
Yeah.
That's when, like, people tune in.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I didn't.
That's okay.
I was still interested in throwing M&Ms at my friends.
Do you know what? M&Ms are better at... it's better to throw M&Ms than to throw, like, Mike and Ike's or like something that's not hard coded. Do you know? I used to work at the Israeli Opera House as an usher. And people would throw kind of like cheese puffs, but they're peanut butter snacks.
Yes.
It's called Bamba. And it would like, you would throw it at some, like they would do some shows that it would be like, obviously there are a lot of a rowdy crowd and they would throw it, but then you would step on it and then it was just like and then there's like a dust of that snack across the theater
and then you're on the set of Hansel and Gretel.
So as you say, you're from New Zealand and we'd love to know what the music or just general opera scene is like over there.
Yeah, I definitely have to mention the New Zealand Secondary Students Choir as being like the beginning of my musical development in terms of classical music and reading music.
Yeah.
I got into the choir not knowing how to read music at all. So I could sing just because I grew up in a Samoan family. I'm Samoan and everyone kind of just sings. You know, you go to church and everyone sings four-part harmonies and that it's not notated, you know, these are things that we pick up by ear. And so I got into the New Zealand Secondary Students Choir and I really feel like it was there that I started to love classical music. And I think for me it was the realization that everything that I kind of thought of like, oh, I'll harmonize this, had been put into a structure on a piece of paper maybe like 300 years ago. It blew my mind to think that.
It's very much like the Jewish tradition in that way because everything is like word of mouth or like...
Orally.
So I'm very familiar with like music is always around, but then like seeing it written down, you're like, what?
Yes. Like at first it's a bit intimidating because you're like, I have to sing one of these lines.
And then
once you do it, you think, geez, that's beautiful. Like it's... You know, it's exactly how the composer intended it to be, you know, centuries later. And for me, that was fascinating.
Yeah.
And I guess the other end of the spectrum is that another fascinating thing with the Samoan culture is that harmonies change as songs are passed down. And you can almost go back in time to where something was changed and what was going on socially, you know, like within the community or...
That's great. And it goes without saying, having that musical ear, going to church and singing all by ear, do you think that helps you learn music today? Or are you very much reading the notes now?
Oh, I definitely can read music.
That's good.
No, I now know how to, read music.
Yeah, of course. But having
the oral training
as a child, do you think you learn and pick up harmony and music quite quickly now?
I think there are a few kind of aspects that's really worked to my benefit. And first, it's learning music. I can learn music really fast if I hear it.
Yeah.
I just hear it once and I can kind of sing it back. And another thing that it really helps with is understanding where in the harmonic structure you sit in a ensemble that you sing.
Mm.
And understanding whether, even though I'm singing a fifth, is it a sharp fifth? Is it a flat fifth? Just because of where it sits in the harmony, you know, like just intonation versus perfect intonation, you know, that kind of thing. Like my ears really tuned into, okay, you are singing, if you're singing a C major chord, you know, three voices, C, E, G, and the E is sounding a bit out of tune, and you're like, oh, just think a bit brighter, or think a bit, you know, a bit sad, you know, all of these things that are kind of go back to my church music kind of, I guess that is where the musical training actually began versus the classical and theoretical, I guess, training starting in choir. But it's definitely helped.
Yeah.
And because like we'll go to church and we'll sing hymns. Some of them are like 7 minutes long,
mm-hmm.
and you're singing a voice part, and you're remembering words, notation, rhythm, for 7 minutes. Like, and for a child, you know, my earliest memory is of singing in church. So for a child, maybe 3 years old, singing a full hymn in harmony, it's cool, you know, like it's a really cool background to have.
Yeah.
It definitely has helped.
Great.
Amazing. It's one of those things that's always, it's like, in retrospect, you think about like, wow, that was really solid training.
Mm.
Yeah. But at the time, like, you don't think it's training.
No.
Like I remember in high school when it was my music teacher said, hey, Benson, I heard you singing in the practice rooms. And because my mum plays the piano, she played the church piano, and my dad plays guitar at home. So we grew up singing, you know, dad's playing the guitar, we're singing with him. We're driving on the way to church or on the way to school, we're singing in the car. And my teacher at high school said, hey, I heard you playing the piano and singing. You can sing. And I thought, can't everyone? I naively thought, everyone can sing. And my teacher said, no, like, you have a voice.
Yeah.
And I thought, I thought everyone has a voice.
Everyone has a speaking voice. Doesn't it just translate?
Yeah.
So you're of Samoan heritage.
Yes.
And you often honor this by incorporating traditional songs within your recitals. Tell us more about this music and what it means to you. Like, obviously we know you had it a lot in church, but what else does the tradition mean to you?
Yeah, I always try and incorporate something from Oceania or from Polynesian or Pacific Island heritage into my performances, whether it be through the attire that I wear or the repertoire that I choose, if I can choose my own repertoire. But for me, I think it's really important that, I myself, as a Samoan baritone or opera singer artist, represents our culture on every platform that I get. Not to shove it into people's faces, but just because I am proud of where I come from. And I am proud of the decision that my grandparents made to migrate to New Zealand for a better future. And I believe that I'm living their dreams.
Mm.
And to pay homage to my grandparents, my heritage means the world to me. I think in order to know where you are going in life, you have to pay homage to where you've come from. And this is the reason why I always try and incorporate something Polynesian, something Pacific Islander, something Maori, Samoan, Tongan, because that is where I come from. Those are my roots.
When you're incorporating this stuff, is it easy to find things that correlate, or is it something that you have to be creative about and get, like, do you know what I mean? Like, how do you fit it into the structure of the repertoire that you're choosing?
Yeah, it is quite hard to find repertoire from the Polynesian, I would say, like, library, just because the way that songs were passed on within our culture was orally. And so I learned most of the songs that I know that, you know, that are Samoan by ear. And these aren't transcribed onto manuscript for voice and piano or voice and guitar. However, I can give the guitar to my grandfather and he can play any song that I ask him to play and we can perform it.
Yeah.
I was definitely blessed last year to do a concert with New Zealand Opera. I lie. It was the year before. 2021.
We get a bit confused, you know, with COVID and everything. I think the years 2019 to 2021 are like blurred.
So in 2021, I did a concert with New Zealand Opera. And it was at the Auckland Museum. And, you know, I've done recitals here in the UK. You know, being the winner of the Kathleen Ferrier, the winners usually tour. So you know, like Leeds Leader Festival, Oxford Leader Festival. I've sung Brighton. But this time I was in New Zealand, in Auckland, where I was born. And I took advantage of that, of being home. And I grabbed one of my favorite guitarists from church. Yeah. And I said to him, let's do a Samoan set. Mm-hmm. I grabbed one of my favorite Samoan dancers because most of the time dances are accompanied by song.
Mm.
And the movement or the actions that are portrayed depict the words of the song. And so I did a full Samoan set of some Samoan songs with like traditional guitar and a Samoan dancer. And, you know, it was, I felt like, oh man, I wish I could bring this to the UK.
Yeah.
Because this is like proper, authentic Samoan kind of music rather than it being transcribed. And
I would love to have seen that. Yeah.
There's a video clip on my TikTok and Instagram.
Oh, amazing.
Of Natalie To'evai doing the Samoan dance and Justin playing the guitar and myself singing. And Justin sat on a chair playing the guitar and I sat on a chair next to him.
Yeah.
And we gave the limelight to Natalie.
Great.
Who that's did amazing. The Samoan dance. Yeah, and that's how it's traditionally done, is that we sit down, we sing, and the dancer dances.
Oh, we'll definitely check that out, for sure.
You actually really inspired me by how you have mixed your heritage together with the concert repertoire that you do, because I come from a modern Orthodox Jewish background and my husband's studying to be a rabbi. So I am very involved in the Jewish world, but finding a way to put my Jewish heritage into a concert setting that's not just the Kaddish that everyone knows that's written by Ravel, a non-Jew, which I love, and I love singing, but it's not the Jewish repertoire that I'm talking about, and all those composers who've kind of, like, been swept under the rug because they were writing Jewish music and not Mahler or people who are writing secular music with a Jewish heritage, but they really were assimilated into Anglo-Christian culture or Germanic Christian culture in order to make their lives work, which I don't complain about at all. That's not what I'm saying. But it's really interesting how you managed to do that. And I think it's really inspiring and really important to discuss.
Yeah. I think it's exactly what we've mentioned, in that it's important to be a human being, first of all. And we're human beings before we are opera singers. And I think that if you're able to present some repertoire from your heritage within a recital, or a recording, or anything really, even an audition, could you imagine that? Like, just being able to put yourself forward as a human being, I think that's the best way that you can possibly do that.
Yeah, I definitely feel like within the profession I've stepped on a few toes, just because I'm not the conventional baritone who's going to sing Winterreise, or, you know, like presenting all of these, you know, typical, you know, repertoire that we sing. But I think it's important that I represent who I am. And if you're not interested in who I am as a person, I'm not really interested in being hired by you. I don't really want to sing for you, because I think the most important thing, this whole profession and music and art is about people.
Yes.
And if you are not interested in people, what are you doing?
Yeah. I second that. Like, it's so important to represent the people who do the thing and give voices to the people who are creating the art.
That's right.
Yeah.
Rather than just say, this art was created already and you're just subject to perform it.
You're here to present what's already been. But I think the most beautiful thing is if you take something that has been sung by thousands of people and you bring your spin, you add your filter to it. For me, that is art. That is true representation of people.
I second that so strongly.
I feel that. It's not even a thing. Yeah.
Yes, okay.
I'm at a point in my career where I'm seeing, I've been through Guildhall. I've been, you know, at the National Opera Studio. I'm now at the Harewood Artist Program, and I'm on my last year. And from next year onwards, I'll be representing myself. And I'm really asking myself, who am I as an artist? And I look around and I see so many younger singers trying to fit the mold of what they think an opera singer should look like, what an opera singer should sing like, what an opera singer should speak like. But I think it's, excuse my language, I think it's all bullshit.
Yeah.
That's not bad language. That's very true language.
It's bullshit.
Yeah.
I 100% believe that people should just be themselves.
I remember seeing a post that you did a couple of months ago about finding an agent. And this is something that, like, really, I'm not at that stage yet. But it still resonated me, because I think there's a backward system in this industry where you have to fit the mold of the agent at the time of the agent, where in any other creative career, their agent works for you.
100%.
And works for you from the start, not from here's the finished product.
I think, sorry, have I interrupted you?
No.
I think what colleges are failing to educate their students about is that at the end of the day, we are a business. We are a company. We are building our own empire. You are the CEO of your brand.
Yes.
And an agent comes under your company or under your business to represent you in certain situations. However, you are still the CEO. Mm-hmm. You are paying the agent to work for you. And I am currently representing myself and I'm enjoying that. However, I am constantly on the search for the right agent for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's important for any young singer who's unsigned or who is looking at being signed to make sure that the shoe fits you.
Yes.
And that you don't have to, you know, fit to the mold. Because like we've been talking about, it's important that you keep who you are, because that's what represents your artistry, that represents you as a human being.
And there's also any time that we've spoken to someone who is an agent or like manager or decision maker of that standard, they're always like, you need to know who you are when you come in to us.
Yes.
But then somehow when, after that said and done, all of the singers that come out look the same.
Yep.
And there's like a singer for that agent. There's a very singer
yes.
style for that agent. And you're like, okay, so you're saying I have to be an individual, but my individuality has to fit into your box of individuals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very complicated.
It's super complicated. And like the only advice I can give is just stick true to who you are.
Yeah.
I've contacted many agents to come and hear me perform. I will not grovel at any agent's feet
mm-hmm.
or company's feet mm-hmm. because I think it's important, as me being the CEO of my company, that I stand strong for what I represent. And it's a lot. People tell me, they're like, Benson, you are a lot. And I'm like, I know.
I get that a lot.
Like, even my wife, she's like, you're so extra. And I'm like, well, yeah, that's who I am. That's who I am. That's and
the best way to be, because you've got your individuality with that as well, and you're being true to yourself. So, yeah.
It's always that, there's also that saying on that I've seen on Instagram a lot, if I'm too much for you, go find less.
Right.
Like, don't ask me to be less of myself. You find someone that fits into your mold, but I'm not changing for you.
Yeah.
That is so, that's so true.
Yeah.
I love that. But as you say, you're over in the UK now. Was it a goal of yours to study and come overseas for your music?
Interesting question.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up, I'm still a Christian, so I grew up in a Christian household, and I'm a firm believer in trusting the plan that God has for you. And if I were to honestly answer your question, I would say no. It was never my dream to come to the UK and study. I had no idea what I was going to do with this talent that I was given, with this voice that I was given, but I knew that I needed to use it.
Mm-hmm.
And it just so happened to be that I was hungry for nurturing, and I entered competitions. And one of the prizes at the IFAC Australian Singing Competition was a year studying at Guildhall. And that's how I ended up in the UK.
Amazing.
That's a great prize.
Isn't it just?
Yeah.
Like, this competition is amazing. That one of the prizes is a year at Guildhall on the master's program. Another prize is a year at the Royal Northern College of Music. And then they have all these other prizes, like a week studying in Germany, you know, to develop your leader repertoire. And just really useful, useful prizes.
Especially because, like, if you get a cash prize, as wonderful as cash is, but if you get a cash prize, you still have to get accepted into those things.
Right, yeah.
So getting to be able to win a year of nurturing or time to, like, develop your talent is, like,
priceless, really.
Yeah, it's really priceless.
You can't put a price on it, can you? Yeah.
Because, you know, what that cut out was an audition tour that cut out flights. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for whoever gets that prize, it's just, I'd say, priceless.
Yeah, 100%. So, whilst you were at Guildhall, you won the, as you mentioned, the Catherine Ferrier Award. Do you enjoy competing, the competitive aspect of building a singing career? Because you mentioned also that you've done a lot of competition.
Yeah. I'll answer your question, because there are a few answers in there. There are a few questions in the question that you just asked. Do I enjoy competing in competitions? Is that
one?
Yeah.
I really enjoy performing. Mm-hmm. I don't see it as a competition. I see it as a chance for me to showcase what I do, to showcase what makes me me. And I love performing. So the competitive side of things, I kind of don't acknowledge it at all, because it can get in the way of the performance. Do I enjoy the competitive nature of the industry?
Of building a singing career.
Building a singing career. You've asked, you know, do I enjoy the competitive side of building a career?
Mm-hmm.
It's super, super, super competitive. And I think, again, if you only think about what you are showing and, what you are showcasing, and if that can be, if it's something that you enjoy, I would just focus on that rather than the competitiveness of this career, this profession, because it is so competitive. People don't understand how competitive it is. It is super competitive. But I think what is even more important is that you are enjoying the work that you have, that you are showcasing what you want to showcase, and that you're being authentic to you, yourself.
I think that's an amazing answer. Yeah, and I'm just trying to soak it all in, what you've said, but that's super, super important. Now, we've spoken to several Harewood artists on this podcast, but we'd love to ask you, what has your experience been like?
As a Harewood artist?
Yeah.
I don't think there is anything that I can do to repay E&O for the support that they've offered me. The Harewood Artist Development Program has been super supportive, and I'm talking about like from the beginning of COVID, because I got onto the program on the year that COVID in 2020,
mm-hmm.
Michelle, Lottie, Jane, they're like the holy trinity of the Harewood Artist Program, and they're just so supportive. They've even to the point where, you know, I've had a season planned out for me for as a Harewood artist, and other work has come up after I've already agreed to do work with E&O, and E&O have looked at me and said, well, it's more important that you go and do this other role. And we'll find someone to do your role here at E&O. And, you know, just stuff like that, like where they genuinely support your career, where they genuinely think about what is helpful for you, and not how you can help the house. Yes, we try and help the house as much as we can. However, the mentality behind the Harewood Artist Program is very much about how E&O can help the Harewood artists.
Mm.
And I'm forever thankful and grateful to E&O for their support.
Mm. Yeah, incredible.
It is an amazing program. And everyone we speak to only speaks highly of the Harewood Artist Program.
But also all round, I think E&O are a very special company. That comes across. Absolutely.
Speaking of E&O,
mm-hmm.
you are currently in the midst of the E&O season, and you are performing at Knotten.
Yes.
Which we can't wait to see. We're coming on Saturday night.
Ooh.
How's it going, and what can people expect of a revival of this production?
I think come with an open mind and an open heart, and you'll walk away feeling good. It's quite a spectacle, but try very hard to be in the moment. I think it's super important that you don't try and understand, but just be open to understanding.
Mm. How have you enjoyed being a part of Akhenaten, this like phenomenon of an opera?
I've thoroughly enjoyed it. It's bonkers. it's nuts.
Yeah.
And working with Phelan McDermott is amazing. He's one of my favorite human beings on the planet. He's just the way that he gets things done is, I don't know a director that can direct an opera that feels authentic to every single person individually.
That's incredible.
Mm-hmm. You know, like you can tell someone to move here, move there, and then you feel like, oh, I'm just doing the director's like movement.
Yeah.
But Phelan has a way of making everyone feel safe and like they've contributed. It's been amazing. The overall experience of being an Akhenaten is phenomenal.
Fantastic. I mean, this opera sounds like one of the amazing experiences that you've had in your career so far. This might be really difficult to answer, but what is the best role that you've ever sung? Do you have a favourite?
Yes.
Okay, good.
The best role I've sung to date is Count in Le Nozze di Figaro.
Oh, you've had a lot of like new opera in there as well. So it's yes. Like you went traditional. You went like, no, that's the best thing.
What, like, tell us more. Like, what is it about the Count that you love singing so much?
What I love about the Count is how silly he is. He is so silly. He just, everything just blows his mind.
Mm.
And he expects everything to be a certain way and sees the world in black and white. Mm. And the world is not only grey, but has heaps of different colours. And it's like the Count sees yellow for the first time. And he's like, what? There's yellow? Who said there can be yellow? You know, like, he's such a funny character to me. And I feel like it's cool. It's fun portraying a character who is constantly having his mind blown in a world that he thinks he is in charge of.
Yeah, definitely. He definitely thinks he's in charge.
Uh-huh.
But it's just, you know, that there's that line in My Big Fat Greek Wedding when the mother says, yes, the man is the head, but the woman, the wife, is the neck, and she can move the head any way she wants.
Exactly.
Any advice for singers starting out in the industry?
I need time to think about that. Any advice for singers who are just starting in the profession?
Mm-hmm.
If you are just starting in the profession, well done. I think what is the most important thing as a person is that you are authentic to yourself. And you're going to have many people judge you because we are in a profession where you're constantly being judged. Every audition is working towards your, you know, the next loaf of bread that you're about to buy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
You're gonna be judged left, right, and center, but stick true to who you are, because it's very easy to let the profession define who you are, and I think you need to remember that you are a person who offers something to the profession, rather than you are a singer and then you're a person afterwards.
Fully agree.
Yeah. Excellent advice. And can you share what's next for you? Anything exciting coming up?
Yeah, I'm singing in my favourite opera, Rigoletto, at Holland Park.
We will be there all again this summer.
Yeah. And I'm looking forward to singing Ceprano. I've sung Marullo before with Glyndebourne on tour, and now I'm going to sing the other part, which is Campciprano. And I have a few concerts coming up after that in New Zealand, in the UK.
Great. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, that's my summer.
Amazing. And lastly, where can people find you online to follow along with what you're doing?
You can find me using the handle Baritone Benson or hashtag Baritone Benson. You're bound to.
It's such a catchy handle. I must say, it's really good that you've captured that handle. It's really good.
I have to say, like, a funny story about Baritone Benson is my brother-in-law and his partner, their flatmate said, "Oh, because we were back in New Zealand. Oh, Baritone's back in New Zealand, and your sister and Baritone are back in New Zealand." And he said, "You know, my brother-in-law said who?" And she said, "Baritone." And he said, "What? Baritone Benson?" And he laughed, and she said, "Oh my gosh, I thought his first name was Baritone and his last name was Benson." So someone out there thought that my name was Baritone Benson.
That's amazing. I was like, Mezzo Avi.
Yeah. Hey, Mezzo.
Imagine if that's how you introduce yourself in this world. Be like, "Hello, I'm Mezzo Avi. Hello, I'm Baritone Benson.
Hello, I'm Soprano Ashley."
Benson. Baritone Benson.
Oh, incredible. Benson, this has been an amazing podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. We've had such a great time.
Thanks for having me.
So, this week's question we thought should be, what was the most meaningful piece of music to you and your heritage that you performed?
This is quite an easy one for me because I made this discovery whilst at RAM and programming my final recital. And I'm so glad I came across this, and I'm so glad that the final recital gave me this opportunity to explore this repertoire. In the end, I only put one folk song from the Northeast into my final recital, but it led to my love for the composer, Eric Boswell. And Eric Boswell is quite famous, actually. He wrote the very famous Christmas song Little Donkey, which is what he's commonly known for, but he has written a really great selection of Northeast folk songs, and I went and I bought all of the books. They're not actually, you know, commonly published, but I found a selection of books that have his score in, and all of the words just really resonate with me because I'm singing about the nature in the Northeast and the Tyne and all sorts. And every time I go home and do a concert, I always enjoy singing Eric Boswell's songs. There's a particular one called But It's Mine. And there's a lyric in that that goes, "It's not everyone's cup of tea, I suppose, but it's mine." And I just love that lyric. It just keeps coming back. So that's mine.
I like anyway. That too.
I thought you would.
Oh, yeah. I feel like I need to print that out and like stick it on my wall or on a t-shirt.
Yeah.
For me, it is a song cycle written by an unknown Israeli composer who really was the founder of music in Israel, like the classical music scene. So he was trained in Poland. He was born in Poland, like many Jews. And then came to Israel back when it was Palestine and was so instrumental in building the music scene. But he rewrote the morning with a U prayer that in Judaism we sing for a loved family member. So someone who's died within your family unit. So he rewrote it for his son musically, but the words are based on the last Russian Hebrew poet before it was outlawed by communism to write in other languages.
Right.
So okay. They combined this music and it's so gorgeous. And I also performed it in my final recital. I did the first three songs. And it's basically seven songs that help you grieve. And like the time scale of grieving. Like, so it's a different stages of grieving. And I am obsessed with it. And I've been trying to get it performed. Not very well, might I add. Anywhere since I've had it in my repertoire bag. So hopefully this would be the year. Or next year. Maybe next year at this point. And it's just gorgeous. It's gorgeous music. It's very, like, you can see how he's influenced by other composers of the time, because this was written in 1940s.
Mm.
And it's just... And it hasn't been recorded.
Really powerful. Really powerful. And it I actually is. Remember watching your... Watching you sing these.
Oh, yeah.
And they I are have them really on YouTube. Powerful. Yeah, exactly.
Yitzhak Adel's Cantatat Evel. And it's really...
That's it for episode 102 of AA Opera Podcast. Thank you so much for listening in, but a big, big thanks to Benson for joining us.
Yes, it was so, so amazing to get to talk to Benson. He is so inspiring. I left that thinking, like, I can do anything.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was just had such a great conversation with Benson. We are also coming very close to the end of our season.
We are indeed. We are indeed. So thanks for being here, guys. Sticking with us all the way through. And yeah, we hope that you're enjoying the podcast. And if you're really enjoying the podcast, then you can buy us a coffee. That would be amazing. You can head to our link in our Instagram bio, find us at AA Opera Pod, and you can buy us some coffees. And that will help support the podcast and keep the podcast going.
And you can also check out what's going on with us online. Ashley wrote a fantastic blog post about the Dead City and our experience going there. And you can follow us on socials. We are AA Opera everywhere.
See you over there, guys. And we will see you next week for a brand new episode. Have a good week, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.